hi, I'm Stefan K. DeMuzio. I was, let's just start at the beginning. I was born and raised in Tokyo, Japan. I have a Japanese mother and an American father. We're pretty different from a lot of the mixed families that I know, because my dad was actually he was a missionary, and that's why he was in Japan. And he met my mom, and you know, he was not a missionary anymore. So when I was born, they named me Stefan, and my middle name is my Japanese name, which is K, and my last name is DeMuzio, which is super Italian. So it's weird. I have a German first name, an Italian last name, and a Japanese middle name. So it's definitely a mix of a lot of different cultures in my family. So I lived in Tokyo throughout my entire childhood till the end of high school. So I was 17 years old when I moved here to Greensboro, and I've been here ever since. So it's been quite a few years since I graduated college, since 2010. And I absolutely love living here. It's Greensboro has really become one of my favorite cities in the world. I mean, even coming from somewhere like Tokyo, which is just so big and just so crazy and hectic, I found Greensboro to be sort of more my pace, and I'm able to sort of be myself a little bit more, which we'll get to further down the line here. But the reason I'm here in North Carolina, the reason I moved from Tokyo to here, my dad, who's American, has some family here in North Carolina. His parents, they're actually deceased now, but they lived in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which always gets me the question, is your dad in the military? And I have to usually explain, no, it's the other M, it's missions, not, you know, military. But so we would actually, since my parents are both teachers, we would vacation to Fayetteville every summer. And that's how my love for North Carolina grew. We would go to the beach and, I hated the beach as a kid. I think all city kids kind of have that, like, I hate the outdoors kind of feeling. Now I love it because, you know, it's just, I guess I'm an adult and I like the chillness of it. But I really love North Carolina. I wanted to know what it was actually like to live here. And I always knew that when it came time for college, I would go to the States. And so I came to North Carolina, got to know my family here a little bit better, and started out at UNCG. Dad used to say it was, I was a third culture kid. I don't know if you've heard that before. It's just something that we're not part of actual Japan, but we're not also part of actual America. It was always this sort of otherness. The great thing though is because I learned to speak the language, and you know, my family, my extended Japanese family, they really treated me like one of their own. There was really no difference there. And if it was just me, and really, I mean, not even my brother, because he's got this curly hair and he doesn't really look as like Japanese as I do. But if it was just me, generally speaking, no one knew that I was not fully Japanese. But if I was with my brother, or especially if I was with my dad, there would definitely be this sort of like otherness. People would treat you different, not in a bad way, but it was more just like they would maybe be a little more careful with how they worded things. They didn't want to, they wanted to be a little more, you know, they'd enunciate better so you could like understand. Now when I go back to Japan with my wife, Lauren, who's American, if she's not there, no problem. Like everyone is, you know, oh, here's, you know, Nihonjin, like, hi, you know, how are you today? But as soon as we're in together, like stepping into a store or a restaurant, I can definitely sense an air of sort of like a polite hesitation before they speak. So it's an interesting, it's definitely been an interesting sort of journey growing up in Japan. I would say I was almost a year old when I came to the States for the first time. Just because my parents being teachers, they had that nice long summer break. And so they would bring me and my brother to Fayetteville. But the thing is, we would always stop off. They didn't have this, they didn't have a direct flight from Tokyo to Atlanta yet. So we would always stop off in Portland and spend time in Seattle with one of my dad's best friends. So we would spend a week in Seattle and then we would come to Fayetteville. So I got to see, I guess, like West Coast, Pacific Northwest. And I definitely fell in love with that area as well. And then we would come here to North Carolina for the rest of the summer. I think always being with my family, whether it be my family in Fayetteville, who were extremely accepting, or my family in Japan, I always had that, I wouldn't call it sheltered, but just sort of a safeguard around me. And I mean, it wasn't like I was always with my family. They did put me in some like daycares and some summer camps and stuff like that, where I did get to meet other kids and actually interact with, you know, some of the Fayettevillean kids. And they definitely had never, I don't think they really knew how to deal with Asians, you know, before. But it really wasn't, but mostly it was like funny. But it wasn't really until I got to college that I'm just like, wow, like this is really different. It definitely hit me as like a, oh, I am an outsider. I am treated differently because I'm Asian, if that makes sense. So when I was a kid, my parents would, I kid you not, drop my brother and I off at Southern Baptist like Bible camp. And they're not like religious. They're not like, my mom's Buddhist and my dad is like an ex-priest. I guess he's religious. But so that's where my brother and I were enrolled, right? So it was a bunch of kids. It was a very, it was not very diverse. Let's just put it that way. And this kid, I guess, had never seen hair as black as mine. And he just kept pointing at me, just saying the word black, black, black. And it got to the point where I told a teacher about it. And you would have thought like he said the F word or something. It was just, he got in such big trouble. And I didn't understand why. I'm like, what, you know, and now years later, I understand that was like a, you know, he was like pointing out some physical feature of me based on my race, and that's like totally not allowed. And he was acting inappropriately. But as a kid, it was just like, huh, okay. Yeah, he's saying something. So that was like my attitude towards it then. But when I moved here to the States, was at UNCG, and you know, my parents left, and here I am alone for the first time in the States. All the kids move in, and people started asking me questions like, oh, there's an Asian over there, do you know them? Are they your cousin? You know, stuff like that. That was just like, so this is what racism looks like. This is it. It was an interesting moment for me where I had to kind of take a step back for the first time and be like, I don't know if they're joking or not. So yeah, that was I guess an example of and to be honest with you, like they always do it in a way that is, it's not really, they're not antagonistic at all. They're not really trying to be mean or anything. But I think that was the first sort of ignorance that I saw. Was that, and everyone always asks me, or used to ask me, is Stefan your real name? Is that like a name that you chose when you moved here? Right, so I got that a lot. Why is your English so good if you're from Tokyo? Right, I got that a lot too. So there was just a lot of, I guess, explaining that I had to give to some of these folks. And actually some of them are my friends, so, you know, lifelong friends. They learned a lot from me, and I think I learned a lot about living in the States from them. It was my dad who was like, you're going through culture shock right now. Because I'm sure when he moved to Japan, he had the exact same thing happen, right? Where he's like, oh, these people will accept me. I guess it was the 80s. It was a very different time for Japan, but I'm pretty sure he went through some similar crisis, right? It was, what did I do? So I'm a musician, and I do a lot of expression through song. And I started writing gangster rap, and I swear it's some of the worst stuff that I've ever listened to. It's just absolutely awful, and it was really angry. It was charged. It was charged with a, you know, like I'm Asian, but like this is, you know, this is who I am. Like I was really. You know, I was actually pretty rebellious as a kid, and I feel like that rebelliousness was expressed in music at that point in time. And my dad, I was on the phone with him, and he's like, are you going through culture shock right now? Because what I'm hearing is you're experiencing racism for the first time. And that was like, whoa, oh my God, you're right. Like, that's, I think that's exactly what my dad teaches anthropology, like that was his thing. So I think he really just hit the nail on the head there. I was like, wow, that I think that is what I'm experiencing. My brother's 1 year older. He's like a year and 3 months. We're basically Irish twins, and we grew up super close together, but he's a year older. So he graduated a year before me from high school, but he found Elon University, whereas I went to UNCG. We might have joked about it, maybe like in passing. He definitely felt it too, because we would invite each other over to our schools. Like he would come down to UNCG, I would go over to Elon. And when we would be partying with our friends, I noticed that when he and I were together, we would kind of act out a little bit more, you know, maybe just exaggerate a couple things that, you know, maybe we normally wouldn't have done. I mean, we're both like drama school kids. Like we were very much performers, but I feel like when we were representing ourselves and each other, our culture, I feel like we kind of turned up the performance to like 11 a lot of times. So I'm pretty sure he went through it, but I don't think he and I actually had like a serious discussion about being Asian in North Carolina. When I'm in Japan, I'm like, man, I could go for like a double whopper right now, you know? And when I'm in the States, it's like, there's just no good like Japanese, where's all the Japanese food? Like, where's my curry? Where's my okonomiyaki? Where's my katsu, you know? So there's definitely the food. I'll vouch for Mizumi. Like that's actually probably my favorite Japanese restaurant here. It's on State Street. It's like it's adorable. And they've been feeding me sushi for several years. it's like ramen. I can't find the ramen place here that's like, that really, you know, nails it. Big shout out to Fayetteville for having a ramen place called Tsubaki that is super authentic. And their takoyaki, which are like the little octopus balls. Oh my goodness. Yeah, my wife and I, we eat a lot when we go there. Well, to answer your question, I went to school to study film, but it gradually morphed into media studies, psychology, and all of that kind of culminated into documentary film at Elon. Okay, so I think anyone that goes to film school will tell you they hate movies now, or they just absolutely did not enjoy what film school did for them. And they'll probably also tell you that you can learn everything you learn in film school outside of film school, except for the networking and the friends and all that kind of stuff. So that was kind of my experience. I went to film school and I'm like, this is not great. There were pretty much all the professors I had were like, you're never gonna make it. Like, and they were saying this to the whole class. They're like, don't even bother going to Hollywood. Like, you know, unless you wanna like serve coffee to a bunch of like producers or whatever. And so that was like my first like, okay, maybe this was not a good idea. But you know, I always loved making movies, and I really gravitated towards documentary because I could do that alone. And without, and maybe that's just me being a control freak, but I could do it alone without a lot of other people trying to, I guess, one-up me on their film knowledge or, you know, it was just one, it was a relationship I had with film that I wanted to do it by myself. And I did make movies, like little short documentaries, early in the early 2010s, for just like little, like a tattoo shop for a farm, just little projects here and there. And I would do these little, I guess just like cinematic music videos where I'd write some music. And then if I was in Japan, I'd film a bunch of like scenes there. But I don't think I ever had a point to making movies until now, where I can tell stories about breweries or tell stories about, you know, small business owners that have some really interesting stories to tell. And now I have the ability to tell those stories in my own way, which so happens, it just happens to involve lots of motion graphics and special effects and just weird stuff. Like I started writing songs when I was maybe 6 years old. I got a tape recorder, right? And I just started like recording stuff on there, taking the tape out, putting that tape in a boombox, putting a new tape in and like overdubbing and making like vocal loops and all this crazy stuff that was pretty awful, But you know, it was fun. Like the creation was super fun. So naturally, that progressed to me in high school wanting to have a rock band. And I was a goth kid, so I had this like long hair and, you know, Catholic schoolboy uniform, like guitar. I was like, this is my life, right? So I played music there. And when I came to the States, I continued. I was writing songs, dabbling in gangster rap that one or two times. But I kept making music. And actually, one of the reasons I transferred from UNCG to Elon was to join a band with my brother. So we were in a rock band for probably, it was like maybe a year, maybe less. So made some good friends, the band broke up. There was a lot of like band drama. But when I graduated college, I just kind of went band crazy. I joined so many bands in like early 2011. I was playing with Matty Sheets. I was starting my own punk rock band. I started a country folk duo. Like I was just anything and everything I could do, I wanted to do it. And so music has kind of been this great constant throughout my, I guess, the last 10 years of my life. And then the pandemic started ramping up. And so we really just, you know, a lot of shows got canceled. It got to the point where it was just kind of like, well, I have to give so much energy to set up a show. I have to haul all this equipment in, and a lot of times you have to pull some really crazy hours. You know, if you're the headlining band, generally you don't play till like, you know, 11 or midnight, you know? So part of it might be like, I turned 30 and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm good. You know, I'm over staying up all night. So I kind of just didn't start back up after things started reopening this year. Not to say I didn't stop doing music. I just definitely that evolved into smaller, more solo type stuff. I'm actually still a recording artist. I had an album come out this year in February. And so music is definitely still part of my life. It's just, I'd rather make music for videos than have to haul all this equipment somewhere, you know, for like one drunk guy to come after the show and be like, "This is the best show I've ever seen, man," you know? So that's sort of, I guess, why I'm leaning more towards video than music. My absolute favorite thing when creating whatever I make is tricking people. You think it's gonna be one thing. Oh, it's a beer ad. No, it's a hop-shaped UFO that's like teleporting people to a magical beer garden where there's like particle effects and flower petals and just weird stuff, right? Seeing people's eyebrows kind of like, huh, like raise, and their eyes kind of light up when I show them something that I've made is just, it's great. It's one of the best feelings I've ever had in my life. When I approach a project, I'm like, all right, cool. How do I start it one way and then just like flip it on its head and do something that no one has either seen before, or no one would expect from a small-time filmmaker here in Greensboro. I work for a Japanese company up in New York. We do everything online. And whenever we're on Zoom calls, everyone's name is listed, right? So it's like, you know, so-and-so's name, so-and-so's name, and bam, my name is the only name that is not 100% Japanese. And when I start speaking and it's in Japanese, I feel like people are having that eyebrow raising, face lighting up kind of reaction on the other side of their computers, right? So I feel like pretty much my whole life has been that exactly. You're not ever gonna please everyone, right? Everything is super subjective. That was a lesson that took me a little while to learn. Nothing is as blank as you think it is, right? That was the big moments for me. 2019, I lost my job, and you know, then the pandemic started, and subsequently I got hired by this company up in New York, which was just awesome. But, you know, when you have failures like that, it just kind of, you go through the motions. I knew the phone call was coming, and I just took a deep breath and I got through the phone call. And afterwards, I'm like, you know, that was actually kind of fun. It wasn't it wasn't this like soul crushing, like, oh, my life is over now. You know, I just kind of like enjoyed the experience of it, if that makes sense. Nothing is ever as bad as you think it's going to be. I went to the dentist today and got my teeth like picked at, right? It's been the, honestly, today's the busiest day of my life. Like dentist, interview, I had to work in San Diego Brewing, right? But even that, like the dentist, sometimes it is as bad as you expect, but just like, you will live through it. You know, at the end of the day, that was a moment that you had, and there will be a moment after it where you will be totally fine and your teeth will be so clean. So that's my wisdom. I'm sorry.